afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, November 18th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Wendy Wilson will be joining us here in just a few short minutes. But first, let's go ahead and see what the markets did today. We have gold today. It was a little all over the page, about a $10 spread. We're currently looking at $1,070 for gold. Silver, a little pressure on silver, not so much, down a penny at $14.28. Platinum was down six. Down seven. Here we go, down seven at 851, and palladium down eight at 540. The USDX today, down 0.02 at 99.62. Crude oil still holding the 40 level, 40.74, up 0.07. And the paper markets today, the Feds released their minutes, and they were, the markets reacted to that today, I suppose. Up 247 points at 17,737. The NASDAQ back up over 5, up 89 at 5,075. The S&P up 33 at 2,083. 10-year yield, 2.27%. Euro. I have to double-check the numbers on euro because this doesn't make sense. It shows it's down 1.43, but it was lower than 107. So if it's down 1.43, that mean it must that had to run up considerably for it to be back down at 1.43 and still be at 107. So not sure what's going on with the euro. Could be computer glitch, I suppose. European markets basically unchanged, both the Asian and the European. Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs is joining us as she does each and every Wednesday. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. And I guess is Al with you today?
Yes, he is.
Yes,
hi,
I'm
Al.
Here.
Awesome. Awesome.
I understand.
I try to be here every Wednesday. I thought we'd talk about
me
the
too.
Bat vaccine.
I try also.
Know? Okay. Well, I thought we'd talk about the bat vaccine. Have you heard about this?
No, but does this mean we can prevent turning into vampires or something like that?
Oh, Lord. You know, anything's possible, Al. You know, because we've talked about, you know, science with the likelihood of that they're intentionally developing ways for viruses that typically infect animals to help them bridge the gap and affect humans. If this is what they're doing, because this is what I think they're doing, I think it's one of the reasons they're doing is to create the threat of more pandemics to sell more vaccines, okay? Now, there was a recent news release from the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, and they've identified a type of bat virus. It's a kind of SARS virus, infects bats. But now it typically was only, you know, isolated to infecting bats, but now they're telling us it now threatens the lives of humans. It's called a new coronavirus. It's called SHCO14-COV, and it was typically discovered in China in the horseshoe bat. Now, actually, a few years ago, I reported on a lot of these scientists 5 years ago were going around and they were looking in bat caves for bats to collect viruses. Now, I don't believe in coincidences. Do you, Al?
No, it is certainly suspicious. It's one of those things where they're looking for bat viruses, and from what you're telling us, to enhance them to make them more infectious for people, and you have to wonder, what the hell are these people thinking about?
Right. Well, it's about, you know, marketing pandemics and vaccines to protect you. That's what I think it is. Now, the thing is, science has not officially stated if this new SARS bat virus is spreadable within the human population. In other words, if somebody gets it, are they contagious? But they're already talking about launching a bat vaccine to ward off a pandemic of this type. So people, I think, need to discern between emerging disease and an engineered disease and how they can protect themselves.
Now, which is more dangerous?
Yeah. Well, emerging disease is typically by nature, okay?
Yeah, I know.
And engineered disease, we know, is man-made. Now, according to the University of North Carolina, this bat virus is going to enter the human body using the same receptors as in bats. And once inside, the virus likes to replicate in your lung tissue. Science has been studying bat viruses since 2003. They've identified 5,000 different viruses that bats harbor. So they have quite a large pool of infectious disease to deal with. Now, according to Ralph Barrick, he's professor of epidemiology at UNC, he says this: studies have predicted the existence of nearly 5,000 coronaviruses in the bat populations, and some of these have the potential to emerge as human pathogens. So this is not a situation of if there will be an outbreak of one of these coronaviruses, but rather when and how prepared we'll be to address it, end of quote. Well, they're already prepping for this.
Yeah, I understand that. If you build it, they will come. That's what it sounds like to me.
Well,
build a better virus and the world will beat a path to your vaccine, sales doorway.
Actually, that was a question that Alina Lusakite, she's a PhD, she studies a social construction. And that was the question she was asking. How do you get the population of the world to accept what the scientific community is reporting on these new disease threats? How do you get the people to believe it, right? Well, she noticed something. She studied the bird flu outbreak. Remember that one?
Yeah, now, we hear about it from time to time. We're always threatened with it. Seems like we get threatened with the bird flu every fall.
Well, winter, yeah. Winter. Okay, so she studied the bird flu outbreak and also the media reports on it. And what she noticed is more people were dying from other diseases than from the bird flu. She also picked up on the scientific community and the media's use of natural disasters to describe the threat of the bird flu. So what she says, you use metaphors of war and natural disasters to whip up anxiety and fear regarding, you know, whatever pathogen you want to promote. So, for example, she says, the newspapers compared the bird flu to storms, earthquakes, and floods to imply its destructive force. And she did some research to check, and she found that the media, what they used words, they linked words to the bird flu, words such as battle, fight, weapon, combat, eradicate, defense, and frontline. And what she concluded is the use of these military metaphors were to imply a war on bird flu rather than on the animals that carried it. So she definitely connected the dots on how zoonotic diseases, which are animal diseases which supposedly infect humans, how they're described in the media. And she says the use of the metaphors, in this instance, she says, have cultural effects by which dictatorial solutions could be implemented. And what do we have now? We have the bird flu now standardized in every flu vaccine. I mean, your flu shot for the year. Right?
I'm not even sure what standardized means. You're arguing what it implies is they've got one vaccine that fits all. All right? And
yep.
No matter what it is, it doesn't matter if it's coming with a parakeet or a bald eagle. We don't care. Our vaccines will handle them all. Plus, we've got others to go along with it. The whole thing becomes kind of crazy. And when you mentioned that there's 5,000 of these pathogens that are associated with bats. If you know, at first thought, you would think, well, the bats must be dying like honeybees. But the truth is the bats population is apparently doing okay, which means these 5,000 pathogens are at least not causing much problem for the bats. Is that true or false?
Right. Basically, the bat population is not, you know, at a threat. If they carry and harbor a virus, if they bite another, like cattle or another animal, typically they can infect the animal, okay? So it's never been really a threat to humans until now, apparently. And you were talking about the 5,000...
Is it really a threat, or have they just sent out some marketing people and said, we got to have something? People aren't afraid of the bird flu anymore. We need something a little scarier. Well, the bat association with vampires and whatever,
yeah.
I don't know.
How about bats?
Let's try turtles. Next year we can try turtle flu.
This is just like other, you know, pandemic threats. Back in the 70s, they did the same thing. There wasn't one case, you know, of smallpox or any of that. And so, you know, they created a whole campaign around it just to sell a vaccine. But you said something about the 5,000 pathogens. Well, it's more than that, actually, Al. Science understands the disease can rapidly change the population landscape. So according to the Scientific Collections International, a lot of research is going on in institutions all over the world, and there's this global network of scientists and organizations that share these disease research reports. So there's even a museum which contains specimen collections of animals, plant, and human disease. Scientists have access to this collection, and we're supposed to believe that they use it just to trace patterns in the history of disease. But this disease museum has tissue repositories and large sections of strains of diseases, and science can study disease genomes and their sequences and compare them to other disease. So this has really led researchers to actually be able to identify weaknesses and strengths in various pathogens and how they can cause infection. So they know how to turn on a gene here and turn off a gene there, and it gives them the capability of manipulating the pathogen in the gene DNA of the disease, and to affect the receptors that the disease is able to cross over to infect another species. Did that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. I think I understand what you're saying. In part, you're saying that these diseases tend to be species-specific, or
right.
at least a class of species, specific to birds, specific to fish, maybe specific to trout, maybe specific to parakeets. I don't know, but trying to get it to cross over to people is unnatural, improbable, but the government or whoever are trying to build better ways to cross that bridge.
Yeah. And here's the thing that's really interesting, that in the last 115 years, according to Echo Health Alliance, 75% of the emerging diseases, we're told, that are, you know, supposedly emerging due to global warming and, you know, modern travel, 75% of these diseases that are now infecting humans came from animals. So some of the most infamous diseases of the 21st century, you know, AIDS, HIV, SARS, H1N1, avian influenza, all animal related. So the U.S. actually
That's
has created.
What we're told.
Yeah, well, the U.S. has actually created the Emerging Pandemic Threats Program. It's called EPT for short. It's an agency that also works with the International Development Agency. And what they do is they say that, you know, society is now paralyzed by pandemic fear, so we have to step in and predict, respond, identify, and prevent pandemics. And I don't know if you've noticed, there's some hot spots in the world where you see pandemics all the time. These are testing grounds for disease and medications. Some of the hot spots have been Bangladesh, Brazil, China, Colombia, Indonesia, Africa, Malaysia, and Mexico. They even have predictive maps that have been created for potential outbreaks, and information like this influences policy of governments. So here's an example. In 2012, the British were all in a panic. Someone from Glasgow went to a wedding in Afghanistan, came back with a tick-borne virus and died. They traced the virus to a tick from Africa and Asia that affects domestic animals there. Virologists at the hospital were kind of surprised that it was now infecting a human. They were kind of stunned by it, but I'm not. I was kind of expecting it with all that what they're doing. So now a UK virologist is warning, Al, that we should expect a pandemic of such enormous magnitude that by 2017 we'll have devastating consequences of biblical proportions. This is John Oxford. He's a virologist with Queen Mary Hospital, right, in London. He says, we have to expect for an animal-originated pandemic to hit the world within the next 5 years with potentially cataclysmic effects on the human race. You know,
but it won't be coming from animals. It won't be coming from government. I mean, the whole idea that AIDS, for example, allegedly came out of a green monkey.
Right.
Well, I don't know. A lot of people will say, no, it didn't. That's just a bunch of nonsense.
I know. And I have...
This is more man-made than monkey-made.
I know. And are we almost out of time? Because there's another chunk that's real important, but I don't know if we have time to cover it.
2 minutes.
We got 2 minutes. Okay. Oxford has been known that doctor, he calls this the super flu or the doomsday virus, but the best virologists in science are working on genetic secrets for viruses right now. And get this, they say that this doomsday or Armageddon virus is going to be able to take out the young and healthy in the population. Science is telling us it's because of these victims have healthy immune systems, which will create what they call a cytokine storm. In other words, they use the virus to manipulate your immune system to propel the infection. In other words, they use your immune system to kill you instead of the virus itself.
Well, that's very clever of them. I'm sure somebody deserves a Nobel Prize or at least a bunch of money. The whole thing is insane, and the people associated with, from my perspective, this craziness breaks loose. If it was up to me, I find anybody who's even close to it, you're going down. They're going to put you in a tank full of this stuff.
Well, just to give listeners an idea, in 2013, scientists of Utah State University spliced DNA from a golden orb weaver spider into a genome of the goat named Freckles. So now when Freckles lactates, she spins spider silk in her milk. So, I mean, they are some really freaky guys out there. I think people need to know that science is reinventing creation. And all we have to do is look at Deuteronomy 28, and God told them, listen, you're afraid of the plagues of Egypt, but you're going to be afraid of the diseases and the plagues not written of in this book. So we're witnessing the creation of modern pestilence is what we're witnessing.
And what can we do to protect ourselves?
Well, I say, you know, turn to God's good herbs because the scriptures are full of instances where herbs are for healing and protection. Psalms 91 is a supernatural prayer of protection. We have immune-boosting herbs. We have cleanses to remove toxins really quick. So if you feel like you need some help there, give us a call at 866-229-3663. 866-229-3663 or visit us online, thepowerherbs.com. Thanks, Al.
All right.
Thanks, Melody.
Thank you, Wendy. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercials, and Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. 4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hello, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, we're going to add 90% silver, $25 face value. They're actually quarters, $25 face value of quarters, along with our AU $5 Liberty gold piece. For $675, that includes all your shipping costs. So you will receive one AU $5 Liberty gold piece, $25 face value of 90% quarters. $675 is the special for today. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And, of course, make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And if you have any questions, give us an email, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. As I had mentioned earlier, as before Wendy came on, you know, they released the minutes today to the feds, stock market's higher, everyone is happy, doesn't make a lot of sense, but we live in a world, Al, where, you know, one and one just doesn't equal two anymore, so...
If you're happy and you know it, buy some stuff. Clap,
yeah.
Clap. If you're happy and you know it, buy some stuff. That seems to be the economy's song.
So the Dow Jones rose. It rose about 160 points after the minutes were released and confirmation, I guess, that you know, she could begin to raise rates in December. So, you know, don't anyone hold your breath, but. It's in the news. You know, just do it and get it over with. It's just so absurd. And I'll tell you what, if the markets are so fragile that they can't or that they have to carry this out for another month or 2 months, people better be buying gold with both hands. They should be backing up the truck to the doors and piling it in. Because, you know, it is just another confirmation that this economy is so fragile. And there isn't anything real about it.
Yeah, including the money system.
Exactly.
Again, this goes to the idea of having a debt-based monetary system. That is an aberration that is perhaps unprecedented. I don't know if the world has ever before had a debt-based monetary system. If it has, that says those one or more debt-based monetary systems, they've collapsed and probably collapsed the economies they were associated with, maybe caused a political revolution besides. But the fundamental idea, I mean, everyone listening to this program should be aware that we have a debt-based monetary system. You should have heard those terms from people other than myself. People talk about debt-based money. What does it mean? It means that where we used to back up our currency with assets like gold or silver, we had paper money out there, but it was backed by gold, it was backed by silver. It was an asset-based monetary system. They have now created a debt-based monetary system. The whole thing is insane. How do you use a currency that's based on debt rather than assets in order to buy things and purchase things? It's insane. It's irrational. And yet they've done it. And what is a debt? It is a promise to pay. Right? If we have a debt-based, if I borrow money from Melody, I borrow $1,000, and I promise to repay the $1,000, we now have a debt relationship. Melody says, Al has given me an IOU, and he says he's going to pay me back the $1,000. That IOU only has value because I'm backing it with a promise to pay. It's the same thing with your paper dollars and your digital dollars. They have value because somebody, principally the government, has promised to repay the loan that lies at the heart of getting this currency into circulation. Somebody's promised to pay. Can the debts be paid? Can the promises be kept? And the answer, as near as I can see, and a lot of other people, I mean, they're essentially saying the same thing, that debt can't be paid. This is of enormous importance. It applies to everybody in the European Union. They're about $14 trillion in debt right now, if I understand correctly, the governments of the European, the various governments of the state, the individual governments, the European Union are collectively in debt for about $14 trillion. China is allegedly in debt, including its state-owned corporations. Its debt runs to $30 trillion. The Japan is in debt for over $250 billion worth of yen, which translates, I don't even remember, into how many billions of dollars or trillions of dollars. I think it's, well, I don't know. But in the United States, $18 trillion. There's more debt than can ever be repaid, and therefore it's not going to be repaid. And why is that significant and even dangerous and frightening? It's, in my opinion, it's because of fractional reserve banking. The system is set up to treat government bonds as collateral in the banks. The government bonds are nothing but a promise to pay. Our banks aren't backed up by having, you know, a box full of gold or silver in there. They're backed by a bunch of IOUs, paper promises to pay. Plus, when they take these paper promises to pay, which they get from the federal government in the form of U.S. bonds, they can use these paper promises to pay as collateral under fractional reserve banking to lend more money than they actually have. If they get a government bond, if they get government bonds for $1 billion and they put it in their bank vault, in theory, they, in this country, they can lend another $9 billion out to the public. You got $1 billion, you can use it as collateral to lend $9 billion. What happens if the $1 billion turns out to be no good? It means that $9 billion has to be called in out of the economy. And $9 billion in loans. And you can do that with one bank or two banks or 50 banks. And this fractional reserve banking is a brilliant scheme. All you have to do is put a promise in the vault. You don't have to put an asset, just a promise. I promise to pay. All right? It's like writing a check on an account when you know there's no money in the account. And they're saying, it doesn't matter. We'll just put this NSF check in the bank vault. We'll use it for collateral. And then we can loan out nine times the face value. If they prove that that piece of paper that they have in the vault turns out to be worthless, and evidence comes through and the public loses confidence in the government's ability to repay the debt, they're going to have to pull in some significant portion of the money that's been loaned into the American economy. And the result will be bankruptcies and unemployment and failed investments. And fractional reserve banking is a brilliant scheme as long as you're on the way up. You can keep leveraging and making your investments bigger and more profitable. Great, great. But when things go badly, that same leveraging works against you. And all of a sudden, when the government loses $1 billion, the public loses $9 billion. This is part of the consequence of the debt-based monetary system. They're using debt, which is nothing but a promise to pay. Now, I promise to pay. Well, so what? A bank should be using assets, not debts. And it's part of the madness that is almost invisible, the average person. You try to explain this, I try to explain it even to myself. And it's hard. It's hard to believe. It's hard to get hold of some of these ideas and say, well, wait a second. You don't suppose that could actually be true. These aren't just hard to understand. They're hard to believe, these kinds of ideas. But when you start to see, what does a debt-based monetary system mean? And how can it be rational? Do you feel wealthier when you have more debt? But that's how the system operates right now. And the people that are most indebted are probably, are arguably among the richest. That's how we get a house. We go into debt. That's how we get a car. We go into debt. One thing after another is paid with debt rather than assets. And the debt is nothing but a promise to pay. This is the same thing as the subprime mortgages and the people who were subprime borrowers. And they came in and they signed a piece of paper. Oh, yeah, I promise to pay. Just fill in the blank. Whatever it is, I'll pay it. Don't worry about me. It was crazy. And it very nearly put the whole world into an economic depression. And we're doing it. It's the nature. It's the fundamental nature of the debt-based monetary system. You look at it and you wonder, how long can this hold together? In my opinion, I'm amazed it's survived as long as it has. But a lot of people agree that it is approaching, you know, a point in time when they finally say, look, we can't run this Ponzi scheme anymore. When that happens, then what? You know, it'll be a moment when paper debt will be wiped out around the world. And when it happens, the only people that are going to be happy are the ones that are holding assets, as holding their wealth in the form of assets, physical assets like gold, silver, land, food, water, something physical, something tangible, not a promise to pay, but a payment. Very two different concepts. Take a piece of paper. If you got a piece of paper that says $100,000 on it, you don't have $100,000. You have a promise to pay at a time when most of the promises can't be kept. What you want, in my opinion, is a payment. Now, to turn that piece of paper into the promise to pay into an actual payment, to my mind, that's gold, silver, something tangible. So, I don't know. The world is nuts. It's mad. And people just look at this, if they look at it at all, and they just, well, it works. You know? Seems like a great idea. It's been working okay for 40 years now or thereabouts. So what's all the fuss? The fuss is it's crazy. It's irrational. And it's bound to fail, although when that failure is going to take place is unknown to most mortal men and women. This Melody. Do you know Melody? When is it all going to hit the fan?
Soon.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Do you have a specific time and date? It'll be about 2:30 on Wednesday afternoon.
It's going to be within the next 2 years would be my prediction. But again, you know, I said for years and years and years, you can never underestimate their power and their ability to keep the system going. I mean, they have unlimited access to, you know, anything they want and they need through Wall Street, through world governments, through, you know, our own government. So, you know, to keep the system floating, to me, but it only makes the end far worse. Mm-hmm. And but the day of reckoning is coming. And, you know, with what we see with this president and where we're headed, and they didn't even mention, and this is my big thing, they didn't mention that no one mentions the debt. No one mentions the debt ceiling. We got 2 years. They pushed it under the rug at a 12 o'clock in the morning, passing it, and that's what it's all about. So, no, my friends, I think we're much closer than I think anyone And it's not going to be nice, and it's not going to be pleasant.
No, it's not. It's going to be dangerous.
It's going to be very dangerous. And
potentially lethal in some circumstances. Mm-hmm. And some people can see it coming, and this is the thing that's annoying about this. As difficult as it is to sit back and say it's going to happen 2:30 Wednesday, first Wednesday after January 1st, 2:30 in the afternoon, that's when it's all going to crash. Nobody can say that. Nobody knows. We don't know the month. We don't know the quarter. We don't know the year. And yet you can see it coming. And I don't think anyone who has looked at our investment climate, our financial and monetary environment, if you looked at it for any length of time, you have to come away shaking your head and say, this is going down. We don't know when, but it is going down. I don't know anyone who can look at it closely. They can say, look, I can make a fast $1,000 between now and an hour from now by high-speed trading. I'll bet a nickel. And with high-speed trading on the computers, I may be able to turn it into $1,000. Yeah, over the course of the next few hours. But if you get caught with that $1,000 in a form of paper debt instruments, when the stuff hits the fan, guess what? You just wasted your time and your wealth.
Here, I wanted to talk about this article before we went into the second break. I thought it was interesting. Here you have Germany's largest trade union. They're opening a joint U.S. office with United Auto Workers. Germany's largest trade union, we only got 15 seconds here, we can finish it up when we get back from the break. Germany's largest trade union, again, is opening a joint office with the United Auto Workers in Tennessee to promote labor issues at German automakers and suppliers in the southern United States. I think it's interesting the way it's also worded as the southern United States. They estimate that 100,000 people work for German-owned automotive companies in the U.S., and unlike their parent company, companies' factories in Germany, most of the U.S. workers are not represented by unions. What makes this, to me, I think, important is because this is part of the goal of the Transnational Partnership Initiative to, you know, help improve wages and working conditions. And here you have two countries now that I believe, you know, we're uniting in this country with, you know, whether it be laws, it's just...
What it really seems like to me is that they're breaking down national barriers.
Yes.
And they're saying the corporation is what counts. If you've got a German corporation in Dusseldorf and another German corporation in Chattanooga, the corporate relationship is more important than the national relationship, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I don't know where
it's just another crazy, and it's not good, and it's another sign that time's exactly where we are as a nation.
Let's take a break for a couple of more commercials, and Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I guess we have another one that bites the dust. Louisiana Governor Jindal, he ends his bid for the GOP for 2016.
Yep, he was bowed out. And that's, you know, I've heard the man speak, and I would say he's probably the strongest Christian who was running for the Republican nomination. And I would say I'd be hard-pressed to point at anyone else in the candidates among the Republicans or Democrats that are more intelligent than Jindal. I mean, he was and in many regards, even though he's Indian-American, meaning his parents are from the country of India, that guy impressed me as being perhaps the truest American that was running for the Republican nomination, but he didn't attract much support, I think, perhaps because of racial issues. But this guy impressed me. I'm sorry to see him go.
Christian beliefs. I mean, he held prayer vigils on the state house steps, you know, to pray for a change of things for the state. You know, it's something that you don't see very often, so.
Yeah, I thought, and it's, we see, you know, I've seen President Clinton coming out of a church where they had somebody's funeral, and he's just laughing and joking with somebody else, and then he sees the camera, and many of you have seen the same thing. He sees the camera watching, and all of a sudden he and his buddy, they stop laughing and put on a serious face as if they care about
it. That was the funeral of Brown,
I don't know. But it was just, it's not unusual to see politicians claim to be religious. All right? They have their little prayer meetings, the rest of it. But Jindal impressed me as being sincere. All right? There's all kinds of con artists that'll profess to be religious. Jindal impressed me as being sincere. And you know, now he's gone. He's gone from this election. And, you know, I wish I would have liked to have seen him accomplish more. I would have liked to have seen him done a better job, break into the tier.
And you know what? Maybe he
debates rather than being stuck in the second rank, in the second tier. But
and maybe he would if Trump had not garnered so much of the attention. So
I think it's just
bad.
The world. This country wasn't ready for somebody from India to be president yet, or at least someone with.
You know that. What? I don't even think that really matters anymore.
I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters. I don't think it should matter. But I think maybe it did matter.
I think he might. Perhaps he would have had. A lot of them would have had a little bit. Hey, divide up Trump's percentage points among some of those, and they all would have had a higher rating to where they would have received higher media attention and so forth.
And well, I get that, but you know, on the other hand,
he wouldn't have been the nominee. No,
the debates would have been a colossal bore. All right, it would be one candidate after another trying to advocate the party line. Trump has stirred things up. So we've had casualties as a result of that, and maybe it's a lesson to everybody. Everybody is maybe who's considering running for president is sitting around saying, you know, it's a crazy world out there. They agree with us on that. But from their perspective, it's crazy because maybe they're going to be forced to tell the truth. Some of them are thinking, this is crazy. The voters want the truth. I don't know what to do. Yeah. Well, maybe they will have to tell the truth. Maybe they'll have to deal with problems rather than try to paper them over and deceive the public and so on. That's what we're used to. We take it for granted. We're going to be conned. We're going to be deceived. That's what politicians do. And Trump might not do that. You know, I wouldn't guarantee that in any politician, and I know that forces can be brought to bear on anybody who gets into the White House, where you find yourself caught in circumstances that you didn't think you could have were possible, and they force you to do things you didn't think you wanted to do. Could happen to Trump also, but for the moment, you know, it's kind of like Animal House. He is bringing a certain amount of integrity to the movie where we, you know, it's kind of like the John Belushi of the Republican Party. For those of you who will remember John, he died from a drug overdose 30 years ago anyway, maybe 40, I'm not sure. Probably in the neighborhood of 40 years ago. But he was a disruptive influence. And pardon me?
Cheeseburger, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's right, that's right. Yeah. Saturday Night Live, and Animal House, and I don't remember what all he was in. Trump is a little bit like that. People like him just because, hey, he's stirring things up, you know? So, in any case, Jindal's gone, and we might see him again in 2020, although I wouldn't bet on it. He said, I've come to the realization that this is not my time. He's the third contender to bail out of the race, third Republican contender to exit the race. All of them are governors, former Texas Governor Rick Perry. He's bailed out. I don't know why he even tried to do it. You know, he couldn't do much better than he did the last time, and he didn't do well then. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, he also cut bait. And now Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, he's gone. So it's kind of like, you know, Agatha Christie's story, and then there were none. Or maybe it'll be, and then there was Trump. Do you think they'll all bail out before Trump actually wins the nomination?
Well, I think, it's still too early to tell, but it really does seem like, he's there to win in the nominee anyway. But if Hillary is there, I just don't see Trump as a good debater when it comes to the Democrats.
Well, we'll watch and see. But, you know, Hillary is congenital. She may be, I don't know if she's a better debater. She's certainly a better liar. All right.
She is.
Yeah. She's a better
liar. She is a better liar.
Give her that. But is that what
but
you
maybe,
want in the White House? God knows that's what we wind up with time after time, but is that what we want to vote for? Vote for Hillary. She's the best liar. I don't know. Is that a bumper sticker melody?
Let's make one if it isn't.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Got an article here, this is from International Man, the world's first cashless society is here, a totalitarian's dream come true. And the article declares central planners around the world are waging a war on cash. In just the last few years, Italy made cash transactions over 1,000 euros illegal. Switzerland proposed banning cash payments in excess of 100,000 francs. They proposed, they haven't done it yet. Russia banned cash transactions over $10,000. Spain banned cash transactions over 2,500 euros. Mexico made cash payments of more than 200,000 pesos illegal. Uruguay banned cash transactions over $5,000. And France made cash transactions over 1,000 euros illegal, down from the previous limit of 3,000. International Man perceives this war on cash as a favorite project of the economic central planners, and claims they want to eliminate hand-to-hand currency. so that the government can document, control, and tax everything. Do you think that's true, Melody? Do you think that's what the government is up to? Is there really a war on cash?
Well, certainly the whole, you know, agenda is heading that way, I mean, to a cashless society. I mean, you know, with the computers and, you know, and but certainly, and they always use money laundering as their excuse to track cash.
Yeah, but
drugs
that gives
and
us
money
the
laundering.
Cleanest money in the world, Melody.
Yeah. Drugs and money laundering was always their reason to track the cash.
I understand, but that's the express reason. But the real reason is in order to tax everything. They want to know what money you've got and where you spend every single dime. Now, the problem they've got with this, the great advantage of cash is that it's anonymous. There's no third party to the transaction, or at least not to the current transaction. If I want to buy something for $1,000 worth of cash, I can pay the $1,000 and I get whatever it is I'm purchasing, and there's no record of it that the government can easily identify and monitor. But at the same time, we see these reports that there may be a war on cash, and these reports may be valid. And the reason is to eliminate the anonymity of cash transactions and make sure that everybody's paying their fair share, including prostitutes and drug dealers and mafia bosses and the rest of that sort of thing. Everybody, that's the theory, but the real theory is we're going to squeeze the blood out of every taxpayer who's out there. They're going to squeeze us to the maximum degree possible. At the same time, the cash transactions are increasingly restricted, and therefore we suffer this loss of anonymity in our financial affairs. At the same time, we're seeing things like Bitcoin turn up on the internet. And Bitcoin's not the only cryptocurrency that's out there, but the point is, one door is closing. We're not going to have paper dollars maybe before this is all over, but will we have digital dollars that are accessible to all of us and continue to preserve our anonymity? And it's an interesting question to me because, again, one door closes, another one opens. Is there a certain amount of pressure for an anonymity that no matter what they do, there's going to be some anonymity in our transactions? Do you think there's a way of maintaining any anonymity in our financial affairs, or are we doomed to reveal everything to government, whether we want to or not?
Well, I think we're beyond that. I mean, I think we're already there. Government knows everything that you do, and people do it willingly and openly. They don't, you know, I mean, how many people actually use cash nowadays?
I do.
You know, there's what, you know, 5% or less of the people use actual cash? Everyone uses their debit cards. Everyone uses their credit cards for most of their shopping and purchases, you know, because it's online. Everything is tracked already.
And people want to keep track of where you're spending your money. You get the report every month on how you spent your money, and it's helpful to people. A lot of people like that. But while you're getting the report, so
is the government.
Yeah.
But it's been like that for a long time.
$10,000 a month, and you're claiming on your income tax to only earn $5,000 a month, they're going to send somebody down to say, hi, where'd you get the extra $5,000 a month?
I mean, no doubt I think there's a movement for a cashless society. I agree with that. I think with the laws, with the, what is it, the FATCA, you know, where it tracks U.S. citizens' accounts, bank accounts overseas, and if banks don't comply with releasing the information, you know, they get penalized and fined and all kinds of things. So, you know, they willingly have given up the information on U.S. account holders. We saw it happen in Switzerland, you know, several years ago, 5, 6, 7 years ago. So they don't want a lot of this cash flowing. And, you know, the next excuse, it used to be drugs and it was money laundering, now is going to be terrorism. You know, they'll use that excuse, but absolutely they want a cashless society.
Well, I understand. I have no objection to a cashless society as long as you can engage in transactions that don't require a third party. But that will be the point. When we get into a pure cashless society, if you are uppity and you have been saying things that the government doesn't like, the government can just turn off your access to your debit card. Ha ha! Now what are you going to do?
Yep.
Right? You better toe the line, ladies and gentlemen, if we're going to live in a cashless society, unless you have something like gold and silver that you can rely on, or perhaps you're going to look at something like Bitcoin. But
I don't think Bitcoin is any different.
As it exists right now, that may be, but still, it could be refined to a point where it is different.
It's still a completely new concept.
All right, it hasn't been around here for long. Get all the kinks out of it. There's no telling what can
happen. And it's just like anything else, though, when it comes to government and it comes to control. They offer this brand new program. You'll be able to hide. You'll be able to do this and do that. And they suck everybody in there. And then the next thing you know, it's the same old game that they played on us before. Shame on us.
It's like trapping squirrels and pigs.
If you want
corn. Put out a little reward, and they'll all come into the cage. We're out of time, Melody. We're going to have to let this go until mañana. Melody and I will be back, and hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
But still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got to be a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all.
Money.